Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Ahí va Darder, la pone primer palo, la peinada al segundo, atención, oportunidad, el golpeo de Gio, la pelota suelta, todavía peligro, ¿para dónde Aguirre Zabala? La tiene la Mallorca, el último disparo termina en gol de Dani Rodríguez para el Mallorca. La pelea Nico, dice el colegiado que siga el juego, se sale el fuera de juego, su hermano, la dejada, gol.
Javier Aguirre está jugando la baza emocional. Tremendo, con su
sí, ya lo hizo en la semifinal.
¿Y cómo lo está jugando? Porque lo que acaba de conseguir es quitarle casi de momento. Luego, cuando llega el momento del paseillo, vuelve la tensión. Pero acaba de celebrar la supervivencia del equipo como si fuera una auténtica fiesta ya.
Ahí va rápidamente Manu Morlanes. ¡Paró! 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 Julen Aguirre Zabala. Ahí va Radon G. Que le pudo a Radonjic. Ahí va Berenguer, ataca la pelota. El Athletic Club tiene la gabarra en la ría. El Athletic Club, después de 40 años, acaba de conseguir la copa de su majestad el rey.
Get the barge ready. Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown. Athletic Club are Copa del Rey champions 40 years later. I'm Matt Clark, joined once again by Paco Pollitt to reflect on a thrilling cup final in La Cartuja. Paco, what were your thoughts?
Well, first up, we have to deliver our congratulations message to Athletic Club, because I think it was long overdue. 40 years, it's a very, very long time. In that time, I think Athletic Club have had their fair share of chances of winning six Copa del Rey finals. They lost all six of them. So yeah, I think that the scenes after their win last Saturday were amazing. The way Ernesto Valverde was praised and you know, manteado, he was flown through the air by the rest of the staff and the rest of the players. It was, you know, beautiful scenes to watch. And also, we have to deliver our congratulations message to Real Mallorca, because I think that their game was almost flawless. I think that they delivered a great game for 120 minutes. They were able to, you know, capitalize on their strengths, which are, you know, defense, aggressiveness, Murici fighting against everyone. And ultimately, it was just the unlucky taking of the penalties, which enabled them to win. So yeah, overall, I think it was a great game. The atmosphere was rowdy, was brilliant, it was massive. I think the word is massive for this game. In scale, I think it was the biggest game of the season over in Spain, even more than you know, other clasicos that we have over here, or derbies, local derbies between some teams. And overall, I think that this Copa del Rey format is definitely the way to go. There are a couple of tidbits here and there that could be improved even further, but I think that the change which was undertaken back in 2019 was definitely benefiting the relevance of this competition, the way it has been developed in the last few seasons, the way it has going down between the teams, and also the relevance given by the own teams to how just important is winning La Copa del Rey. Back in the day, it became, you know, some sort of a hassle for bigger sides, and I think that it has finally recovered some sort of shininess and an importance to Spanish sides. So in my view, that is great for Spanish football.
Yeah, it was a fantastic spectacle, as you said it would be before in the preview pod, a festival of football. And so it proved. Mallorca started the better. They seemed to settle the nerves a lot better than Athletic Club, and they took the lead through Daniel Rodriguez, one of the players who's been with them ever since they were in Segunda B. So a great story for him to score on that stage. And they were ahead at the break. So as you say, Aguirre's plan was working to perfection.
Yeah, I think that the game plan for El Vasco Aguirre was more or less followed just to the small detail. Especially as they were able to come forward with that opening goal. I think that it came maybe a bit too early for them, because ultimately it proved that they would have to, you know, defend for most of the game. But also we have to say that the finish by Dani Rodriguez was great in a play with a couple of rebounds inside the box and so on. And he had the cold blood of, you know, just controlling the ball, searching for the best moment to finally strike and score that opener. And from that point onward, it's true that the domination delivered by Athletic Club was undisputed. You know, both Iñaki and Nico Williams were the ones running the show, as expected and as we said in our preview pod. But you know, I actually compared them to, you know, that well-known meme of the horse, so well drawn whenever they set up the play, but their finishes were not as great. And actually, I think that Athletic Club could have leveled much, much earlier if they had been a bit more successful with their finishes. I think that was the main issue with them. Nico Williams actually scored late in the first half, but the goal was disallowed because he was in offside, obviously properly. But overall, Athletic Club were trying just to find their footing first, and later to find their groove. And they were eventually, you know, dominating the game, playing more comfortably, and following what Valverde had planned ahead. So we had already what we had expected before the game. Athletic Club being the ones in charge, and later, obviously, Mallorca defending. So that followed through to the second half. And yeah, you know, the final stretch of the game was pure amazingness with the nerves and the nerve-wracking chances for both sides. Many incidents happening. Murici getting his head open, leading with a headbutt from another player, and regardless playing the full game and scoring his penalty. So many, many little stories here and there, little micro stories here and there, which gave a bit of more flavour to such an amazing game.
Yeah, indeed. And Nico was man of the match at the end of it. It was Oyan Sanset who got the equaliser. And then, as you say, those nerves.
Great pass by Afet.
Yeah.
Great assist by Nico, yes.
Yeah, stupendous. And then it was, as you say, those nerve-wracking moments in extra time when no one was to be the one to make the mistake to cost a goal. And so it came to penalties, as Mallorca did in the semi-final. And once again, Aguirre just made the laid-back approach of, you know, treating it like a kickabout in the park. It was incredible to watch in a cup final.
I think it's Aguirre one of
just
the
nominating the players and cheering for the players to take them.
I think it's one of the first times I've seen something similar in professional football. And, you know, you had to see, I actually think that we have opened the show with that moment in the broadcast when Aguirre himself was the one designating the players to take the penalties. and the rest of the squad were just cheering as loud as they could, relieving the pressure of being in such a moment. Whereas for Valverde took a more, you know, traditional approach with all of the team surrounding him, delivering a couple of late instructions and advice here and there. You know, Aguirre was just trying to make things as less important as possible in the sense of trying to relieve as much of the nerves from his side. Unfortunately, it didn't work, but if it had worked, it would have been amazing, you know, one of the stories of the season. I think that his approach was pretty novelty. I really like that. But yeah, unfortunately for them, they, you know, Manu Morlanes, the way his physical appearance when he was approaching the penalty spot was not the best, and definitely it seemed that he was bound to miss. Mallorca's goalkeeper Grief was very close to stop a couple of the penalties taken by Athletic Club. But ultimately, the Basque side were pretty much flawless in all of the penalties. Raúl García, a veteran, Iker Muniain, another veteran captain of the team. So yeah, overall, I don't know. They deserved it the most because they were the most accurate in that sense.
Yeah, indeed. Commiserations to Mallorca, the first team ever to not be behind on the scoreboard at any point in the competition and yet not win the competition. So pretty gutting from that perspective, of course. Their fans were phenomenal in making the trip across and, of course, now have to head back to the island. But as for Athletic, we have to talk more about them because we've got so many subplots. We've got the Williams brothers, we've got Valverde, we've got Iker Muniain finally lifting the trophy after seeing and applauding other teams lifting it in front of him. Where do you want to start, Paco? Should we start with Don Ernesto?
Definitely, yes, even though Román de Arquer and some Barça fans will later want to strangle me because I'm a Ernesto Valverde stan account, if we were speaking about social media. Yeah, I really, really like Ernesto Valverde. I really believe that he's currently the best Spanish manager in La Liga, even more than Mitchell in Girona because of the, you know, the number of handicaps he has to play with when managing Athletic Club. It's true that their financial status at this point is quite good because they are able to tackle some big signings and especially keep in their squad some big players as the Williams brothers and so on. But, you know, that is related to all of the fiscal affairs and tax affairs, which are different between the Basque country and the rest of the Spanish territory. But if you leave that aside, it's true that they have been able to build brick by brick this squad, you know, trying to make the smartest moves possible, not really being afraid of letting players go, like for example Íñigo Martínez back in the day and so on, and trying to enhance the squad with all of the Basque origin talent that they can scout all over the world, and at the same time by really working their that off with their own academy. I think that the number of chances delivered to some players coming off the, you know, the grassroots system of Athletic Club in Lezama and their B squad, their B team and their under 19 squad, you know, they are very empowered by their credence and their belief in their youth academy system. And in that sense, I think that this kind of model has no other team replicating in any other country, I would say. You have similarities here and there, but you can say definitely that Athletic Club are a unique side, 100%, because of their idiosyncrasies, of their, you know, always trying to build it from scratch, so to speak, with homegrown players and Basque players and so on. So yeah, and having Ernesto Valverde, who is himself a former Athletic Club manager, he has won almost everything except for the Champions League back in the day with Barca, and actually those two big defeats in Liverpool and Rome were ultimately the ones which marked his demise. But he really dominated in La Liga in his tenure as Barca's manager, and also in the Copa del Rey. So I really believe that for Valverde, it isn't the same to win as Barca's manager this tournament than to do it as Athletic Club's. And he was, this guy is a very serious guy. You know, I knew him back in the day, almost more than 10 years ago when he was Valencia's manager, and he almost never smiled. You know, he's a very serious guy, even though on his private environment, he's very relaxed, very easygoing and so on. But his public image is like a very, very serious, you know, grounded guy. And finally seeing him to relax, explode with happiness, celebrating with his players, I think it was great. And definitely very much deserved by Ernesto Valverde.
Yeah, congratulations to him. And phenomenal scenes in the stadium and also in San Mamés, where the stadium was absolutely packed out as they watched it on screens. Phenomenal scenes in Bilbao. I'm pretty sure there were no cars on the roads around that time because the majority of the fans were either in Seville or in the stadium in San Mamés. So it's going to be a wild party when they come back on La Gabara. A word on the Williams brothers. And I mean, Nico has been a revelation the last couple of seasons, and Iñaki is just loving being able to do this with his little bro.
Yeah, and I think that this kind of both relationship, friendship, it's something also very weird to watch in world-class football, in elite sport, in some sense. They are both similar and different in a number of ways, both in their play styles, both in their attitudes, both in the gravitas that they bring to the table, because Iñaki Williams back in the day followed a trail which his brother Nico is now following. You know, he was the youngster, the new guy, the revelation player, the guy in charge of moving the tree up and down and trying to get something positive out of you know, making a ruckus in a game. Whereas for now, Iñaki has become that kind of wiser, more experienced player. He has finally learned how to really make the best of his abilities, both his quick pace, his speed, moving onto the space, taking advantage of the space generated by the attacking front. You know, they are in some way complementary to each other. They are able to really, really collaborate very well on the pitch because ultimately they have played with each other for their whole lives, not only for the year they have been members of the team. And as I said earlier, Matt, I think that the real merit of this club, of Athletic Club, has been really keeping them in their squad for so long. Because I definitely believe that big sides are coming this summer, for example, to try and sign Nico Williams. And at the same time, I don't really think that Athletic Club are really keen to let him go. If someone really, you know, goes crazy with an offer, they were sure for sure take a look at it and make a choice and make a decision about it. But if not, Athletic Club really know that once they really spot a real talent, as Iñaki was back in the day and Nico is currently, and for example, Iker Muniain was back in the day, he has been playing forever, you know, forever. Everyone thinks about Muniain as this kind of youngster, and he's been playing for over 12 years, 13 years, I don't know, it's been a long time. Keeping them in the squad is the real key for the success, because it's not as easy to replace them, because Basque-born talent or Basque-origin talent is really limited for, you know, expected reasons. So I think that this summer is going to be interesting. It really will depend on also on the way Spain perform in the Euro 2024. Nico Williams is definitely going to the tournament, and I expect greatness from him because it's one of the players upon which Luis de la Fuente have really the most faith, because he really, really believes in Nico Williams' abilities. So yeah, I expect some offers coming over this summer, and at the same time I expect Athletic Club to turn them down, because having these two brothers creating mayhem on top of the pitches is something beautiful to watch.
It really is, and as you say, unique in the world, as their tifo in the stadium said too. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll look back on Valencia's win over Granada and look ahead to the Champions League matches coming up this midweek, because the football just doesn't stop. Join us in a bit.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
El envío de Pepe, lo viene cerrado, despeja Lucas Boyé, hay segundo remate, le pega Almeida, ¡gol! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol de Almeida! ¡Gol del Valencia!
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. There was a La Liga game since our last podcast, and that was the rearranged game between Valencia and Granada. As you say, Paco, wasn't a classic, but it was another win for Valencia, putting them right in the race for seventh place, which of course now is almost certain to become a European spot because Athletic Club have won the Copa.
Yes, obviously, this is like a secondary effect of Athletic Club winning the tournament. It means that they will play definitely the UEFA Europa League next season, unless they are able to snatch the fourth place from under Atletico de Madrid's feet. In that case, Atletico would play the Europa League, and also Real Sociedad. So regardless of what happens, two of the teams, fifth and sixth, will play this competition, and the seventh spots suddenly becomes something to fight for in the remaining eight games in La Liga. And in that race, we have Valencia, leading the pack at this point with 44 points after their win with that pending game they had against Granada. Remember, Valencia 44 points, Betis 42, Osasuna 39, Villarreal 38, Getafe 38, Las Palmas 37. So there are six teams bound to fight till the last stretch of the competition to finish in seventh. I think Real Sociedad will be able to, avoid the drop further, because they have won their last three games and they have a 5-point lead upon Valencia. But speaking about the game itself, it was not that great, Matt. It was a very, very bad game overall. You know, you could definitely see that Granada are enduring a very, very, very harsh season. It's like their fifth or sixth defeat in a row. Another change of manager, with Sandoval now sitting on their bench and in their sidelines, and nothing has really changed, because Granada had their couple of chances to actually score, and they were just unable to do that because Valencia's defense was quite efficient throughout the game. Whenever they are unable to do that, Mamardashvili is the one in charge of stopping every single chance. And Valencia had only, they only had to just wait their chance. And in the second half, late in the second half, Andre Almeida with a great strike, with a bit of luck, with a rebound, he was in charge of scoring the 1-0 and winning the game. So I think that Valencia did as little as possible to take the 3 points home, and regardless, they were able to succeed. So many, many things going on for Valencia in their positive side of things, because under any other circumstance, they would have lost or drawn this game. But at this point in the league, it seems like whenever they are tossing the coin, it the result is heads. So yeah, fortunately for Valencia, this win gets them a bit closer to a goal, which was not on top of the table at the beginning of the season. Remember, Valencia from the get-go had only one goal, and it was expressed out loud by the president, Lei Hun-chan, and Meriton Holdings, who are the guys in charge of demolishing the club in the last 10 years and, you know, turning Valencia from a mighty club into one club who kickstarted the season with the only aim of avoiding the drop. And that was stated publicly.
Yeah.
But Rubén Baraja is so great and the squad has so much overperformed throughout the season that they are sitting comfortably in the seventh place. Obviously, they are free from any kind of danger of relegation. Actually, I think that they are only one game away from making it mathematical, okay? And yeah, definitely, if Valencia are able to win or get the most out of the pending games at home in Mestalla, they are going to be strong candidates for seventh. Betis have lost the last four. Osasuna are in that kind of ups and downs. Villarreal, which was the biggest threat for everyone, had won four in a row and suddenly lost last week. Getafe, you know, one win, one defeat, one draw, again, ups and downs. So if Valencia are able to remain consistent, they are definitely bound to fight till the last game to become the seventh in La Liga.
It would be fantastic for them to get back into Europe, as you say, out of the blue. As for Granada, yeah, 20 defeats, more than any other side, even more than Almeria. And even if you combine Granada and Almeria's points tally, it still wouldn't be enough to save that combined club. They'd still be a point short of Celta in 17th. So those two Andalusian clubs in particular having an absolutely dreadful season, and relegation will be a matter of weeks away. Right then, Champions League time, Paco. It's the quarterfinals. It's three of the eight are Spanish sides, and we kick off at the Bernabeu on Tuesday night. Real Madrid taking on Manchester City. I mean, we've seen this tie a few times in recent seasons. What are you expecting this time?
Well, obviously, this might be the game which should have ended the competition. This is a final in everything but the name. And as you said, you know, many things going on in this game. By the way, we already have the referee. We have a Frenchman, I believe, François Letexier. Yeah, Frenchman. And, you know, City trying to, you know, rotate a bit of their squad in order to keep the things fresh before this game. Guardiola, by the way, seems to have some kind of physical problems in the last few hours. But I think that City are going to get to this game in tip-top shape. And as you said, these teams have faced each other so many times in the last few seasons that they already know their ins and outs pretty well. So Real Madrid maybe facing their biggest foe. Maybe the only team able to stop them in their quest to conquer the 15th trophy in this competition, and obviously Manchester City trying to do the incredible feat and the amazing feat of winning it back to back, something which only Real Madrid in the last few decades has been able to do. So, you know, the game at El Bernabeu will be a matter of details as always. And in Guardiola's head, definitely I think that he is going to try to take the game to a narrow scoreline, try to dominate the ball possession and try to impress like they did, for example, a couple of seasons ago in that game which Real Madrid were able to turn around in the extra time in the second half. So obviously they're going to try to imitate that game and their play style and their scoreline, and try to reduce Real Madrid's chances of making a comeback and change the ending of the story.
Yeah, I mean, last season it was the semi-finals and it was 1-1 at the Bernabeu, and then City tore them apart in the second leg in Manchester. So Madrid will be thinking that they have to take some sort of lead, surely, to Manchester next week to be in with any kind of chance, you would imagine.
Yeah, I think that playing over at the Etihad is not going to be easy for any side, obviously not for Real Madrid. The mystique of playing at home in El Bernabeu, is especially in European nights, is something which cannot be replicated away from home. And Real Madrid feel the most comfortable and at the peak of their powers whenever playing in that kind of environment. So yeah, definitely if Real Madrid are unable to win even narrowly in this first leg, they are going to see the battle go quite steeply uphill in the second one, because Manchester City are quite mighty whenever playing over at their own ground. So yeah, Real Madrid need to win the opener, need to win the first leg. Even a 1-0 would be fine, I believe, for Ancelotti. And definitely Manchester City would be, in my book, really, really happy with a draw or even a narrow win for them, because it would make things much easier for them in the second game.
Certainly would. And City, of course, unbeaten since December. And Rodri himself unbeaten since last March when he was playing for Spain against Scotland. So formidable opponents for Carlo Ancelotti's side. But if anyone can stop them, it is Real Madrid in this tournament, as we've seen a couple of seasons ago. Wednesday then, and we have two fascinating clashes, I think it's fair to say. Atleti taking on Dortmund, and then Barcelona heading to Paris for a reunion with Ousmane Dembélé, Luis Enrique, and of course the other subplot, Kylian Mbappe, of course. So, Paco, where do you want to start? Should we go PSG-Barca first?
Yeah, because actually I believe that Luis Enrique was trying to, keep the squad fresh, and they drew this weekend in the League One. They already have their, you know, the trophy in their pocket. It's just a matter of days or of weeks. So he decided to make his fair share of rotations with almost 9 or 10 changes in the starting lineup. So most of the squad who is going to face Barca in the following days is going to be in tip-top shape. So yeah, the game has many micro stories within. As you said, Mbappe, before of his move next summer, who knows, to Real Madrid, 99% of the chances that he's being welcomed to La Liga, but in Barca's biggest enemy on top of the pitch. As you said, Dembélé, once again, another reunion, Luis Enrique in the sidelines. Many threats to be analyzed and dissected in the following days before the game. And if we speak about the game itself, I think that the Mbappé is going to be like the thermometer of this game, like the litmus test of how it's going to go for Barca. If they are able to keep him pressured and uncomfortable and well defended by Barca's defensive system, they might have a shot of not only moving on to the next round, but winning this game, and which would be massive. You know, winning over at Paris for Barca in the away game in the first leg would be massive for their confidence, because they have been lately making their own rebound in La Liga, playing a bit better, getting the results, putting some pressure on Real Madrid, even though the point difference is still very, very large. But European scenery is another story, and they need to really be at the top of their game if they really want to get something positive out of the game. Maybe Cubarsí might have his biggest challenge in his only 17 years old player career, and his couple of months as a starter for Barca. I think that trying to keep Mbappe as tightly defended as possible and as tightly marked as possible will be maybe his biggest challenge to date. And let's see how big players are able to respond in this kind of maximum pressure atmosphere and environment. Lewandowski, for example, this season has been quite disappeared in big games, and I expect eventually for him to make his mark in one of these games. I don't know if in this one, in the second leg, I don't know if in another game in La Liga, in the following El Clásico, I don't know, but Lewandowski has been so discreet so far that I expect at some point for him to make a statement, and maybe making it in this game would be the best way of making a comeback.
It would be. PSG, for that matter, haven't lost since November and haven't lost at home since September, so Yeah, quite a tough ask for Barca, but again, a draw there wouldn't be a bad result.
No.
What about Atleti then? They've already knocked out Inter, which seemed improbable. I think the problem for them is that the second leg is away. If they'd have been at home second leg, I'd have definitely fancied Atleti. I probably still do fancy them just about, because Dortmund are, I mean, they had a winning run, but they lost this weekend and they're only fifth in the Bundesliga. It's quite an even tie, this one, do you think?
Yeah, I actually think that Dortmund are an easier team to face than Inter.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And that is something weird to happen in at this level in the Champions League. But, you know, Providence has allowed Atletico to enjoy this chance of getting the ticket for the semifinals, which would be incredible for Simeone once again, because I think it would cement him as not only one of the best coaches or the best coach ever for Atletico de Madrid, but one of the best which has you know, coached in a Spanish side, because I think that Atletico have less quality players and less tools to work with than other massive sides in this competition. So yeah, they're the favorites, definitely, even though they're streak of results in La Liga has been a bit wonky lately, with their defeat against Barca, winning very narrowly against Villarreal. They lost against Cadiz. They lost in the Copa del Rey semifinals against Athletic Club, 3-0, a very, very clear scoreline. So many ups and downs in the last couple of months, but where it really matters, you know, the Champions League, they were able to pull off the miracle against Inter. So in that sense, they have nothing to lose. And the biggest motivation, I would believe, at this point in the season is trying to knock out Dortmund, squeeze into the semifinals, and just go for it, because they have absolutely nothing to lose. They are, in my book, they are the underdogs in this competition. I was just checking out between Arsenal, Bayern, Real Madrid, City, PSG, Barca, Atletico Madrid, Dortmund. Both Atletico and Dortmund are the underdogs.
Yeah.
So whoever is able to knock out the other and qualify for semifinals will be living the dream. I expect Griezmann to make a comeback, because he has been a bit, you know, under his usual level lately. And yeah, I think that winning their game and making a statement at home would be the way to go for Atletico Madrid, because playing over in Germany isn't going to be easy. The atmosphere that you always have at the Dortmund arena, over in the stands, with the chants, with the you know, the way they support their team, is very tough to play over there. So getting a nice advantage, 2-goal advantage maybe, would be optimal for Atletico, but at the same time, you know, the German side isn't going to make things easy for them.
Definitely not. No, something to look forward to this week for sure. We'll be back with a review of those first legs on Thursday morning. Until then, though, you can subscribe to us at llonline.substack.com to get all our written content in between then and now. Great offer for you, just £5 a month to get all of our content and the extra bonus midweek pod. Paco, thank you very much for your time. Back-to-back pods for you. Congratulations once again to Athletic Club. And until Thursday, have a good week. Adios.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.